Welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike on Twitters, and he's fired up. Chris Moneymaker Marler. What's up, buddy? How you holding up there for the latest Marler Monday?
Oh, I'm just, you know, before Bama loses to teams in this chat, it is just a fucking onslaught of horseshit comments about my looks and whatever else for like a fucking hour. So can't wait.
Hey, for the first time ever, someone literally sent me a recipe. I wanted to spare you this information, but they sent me a recipe for cooking crow in case you'd like to eat it. You have any interest in eating crow?
So listen, Oklahoma deserved to win that game. They did all the stuff that good teams do. I think that's like one of the things I said going into the game was that like they have shown over and over and over again they cannot figure out ways to not turn the ball over. That's what Alabama has done better than any team in the SEC this year. And you know, I also said the thing with Ty Simpson was like maybe you just don't throw it like 50 times in that game. Maybe that's the best way to do it. But like Oklahoma had shown over and over and over again, that's who they were. And that's also how Alabama had shown who they were. Credit Oklahoma, because Oklahoma came in there, had three takeaways. I honestly didn't think like their offense didn't put up a ton of yards, but I thought Mateer was fantastic. Mateer was great that entire game. Again, not having a single turnover against that unit, really didn't have any situations where he was throwing into bad windows or close. Ty Simpson was. And I thought the way that they elevated that defense in the second half, being able to get after Ty Simpson, the blitz rate was like 62.4%. That's when they had all four of their sacks. They got after Alabama on the edges, made it very, very difficult for Ty Simpson to, he was getting like offensive lineman being pushed back into his face for most of the afternoon, especially in the second half. I thought it was really, really impressive and a great job. And now here's the thing, like that Oklahoma team can go compete for a national championship because now you scratch the surface and you're like, dude, if Mateer can just play mistake-free, he doesn't have to go put up 300 yards of offense. He can just play mistake-free. And if he can do that, the way these freshman running backs get going, the way that they're getting healthier as the season, like what I would assume would go on, if that happens, and you got to think too, Mike, they get Missouri with most likely a backup quarterback or a banged-up Perbula. They get LSU most likely with a backup quarterback. You're going to get two teams at home to close the season that you won. It's there are two revenge games from last year, and then you get a chance to put a fucking bow on this season towards the end of the year. That's awesome. And then you're not going to go to Atlanta, and you'll get an extra week of rest if you get into the playoff. Again, everything that had happened all season is why I made the fucking prediction of what was going to happen. It happened every week for both those teams all season. It didn't happen in this game. I was wrong. Credit Oklahoma. I thought it was an awesome, awesome job from their team, from their preparation, not rolling over tired. And here's the last thing I'll say to you, Mike. You get to a playoff game, and I don't think the sky is falling for Alabama. But if you get to a playoff game, I said this on your show last week, Bama has to make sure they are able to go do little things that they don't do well early to feel confident that they can do them late, mainly field goals. And when that – I'm gonna try not to say – that was such a pussy-ass move from that kicker. to go in there and then yell at his long snapper. You missed a 36-yard field goal. You know who doesn't do that is Oklahoma. And so when you go to games where defense travels in this league and in college football, and then you also have situations where you have, like, a field goal kicker who's 7-for-7 from 50-plus, yeah, man, like, that'll go win you ball games. And, again, if you're playing like this where you don't have any turnovers – for the first fucking time all season, then yeah, man, that's a really, really good team.
Well, you know who else is really good? One of our favorites, Cousin Rick.
It's Texas A&M's biggest fan, Cousin Rick. Gig'em Aggies.
Thank you, Rick. Oh, we'll talk about A&M here in a second, but he says, Marler's a great guest. Thank you. Thank you. And shout out Russ. Marler is the GOAT guest. Greatest of all time. Shout out Marler. And shout out B-Dad. B-Dad gifted a membership to Marler? I don't think so. He gifted it.
I'm down 5 pounds from last week, so fuck y'all.
Dustin boy, Dustin, welcome. Hey, well, last week I also asked you, Chris, I'm like, Alabama, is it time to be a little bit concerned? You've kind of already answered this, and you said, why? Because they keep winning. Well, that's done with now.
I told you I was concerned when it gets to the bigger picture because they can't run the football. There's definitely reason to be concerned. I tell you right. What was most concerning, dude, because this is crazy. I kind of thought that they ran the ball pretty well. Like I thought they
considering the defense, right? They were going up against, you mean, probably?
Yeah, for sure. Like, listen, I know what the numbers are. They were like, what, it was a 2.8 yards per carry or something like that? Like, it wasn't a lot. I mean, and here's the other thing too, Mike. It's like, here's how it's hard to be moved off this for me, why I don't think the sky is falling for Bama. The right team won. You had a pick six. You had two turnovers inside your 30-yard line. But then you look at the other side of that, and it's like, you had two turnovers inside your 30-yard line. You had a pick six, a missed field goal, which I don't even know if you should count the missed field goal thing, because that just like seems par for the course for them.
Look at that comment from Emily. Marler, you look great. That's what she said. And she's an Auburn fan. She's got no reason to like you, but she does.
Auburn fans like me more than Bama fans. I don't know why. about to marry one. So no, I think that was like there's cause for concern in the run game. And I'll tell you what's really a big concern too, Mike, is because you look at this and you're like, well, who do you put in to run? They had what's his name? Daniel Hill in there for most of the game. And then it was like, well, you can't take out Jam Miller because he's so good in pass pro, and you can't have this freshman because of pass pro. Jam Miller is a very large human. Daniel Hill is like 6'1", 245. Both of their asses were getting blown the fuck up by defensive backs from Oklahoma. So if that's the case for the pass pro for Alabama's offense, then I'm putting A.K. Deer in now because he's the most explosive player in that backfield, or I'm keeping Daniel Hill in and you work on the pass pro stuff. There's so many concerns they have there because you have an offensive line that should be very, very good at just moving bodies, and you still can't run the football. I saw someone praising Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubbs' like whole shtick where it's like, oh, man, like they look at this incredible creative play they had on fourth and one, and it's like, dude, it's great. It's really cool how creative it is. But you know, it'd be even cooler if you could just fucking nut up and line up and run for one fucking yard to get a first down. And they routinely can't do that. They couldn't do it against Vanderbilt. The first game of the season, or first interception of Ty Simpson's season, that was on fourth and one. You couldn't do it against LSU. You got stopped on the very first drive and you got all fucking cutesy with that, where it's like, okay, we're going to shift Ty Simpson over and then we're going to have the running back behind center. And you'll never guess what happens, Mike. They're going to snap it to the running back and he's going to run it in there for a loss of one. You're like, what? So all of those things I think are that's not winning football to me. Like that's not winning. Listen, there's a lot of things that Oklahoma, for instance, their offense doesn't do consistently well. I bet you they could fucking line up on fourth and one and go get a first down the old fashioned way. I bet Texas could do that. I bet a lot of other teams like Vandy. So it's just frustrating, man. I think it's frustrating for Bama. I do think there's concerns. I will tell you, yesterday I was like, fuck me, because now they have to go to Auburn to get into the playoff. But here's the way I view that, man. If you can't fucking beat Auburn, who's 4-6 right now, I don't give a shit about all the spooky stuff in Jordan Hare. If you can't go beat that team, you never deserve to be in the playoff in the first place. So go take care of business and you're in. And same for Oklahoma, which I expect them to do. And now you're looking at a possibility where it's like, you might have five SEC teams in the playoff a year after having only three.
Yeah. Hey, shout out SEC Sean. Chris, he says, respect for Marler. A lot of people would have canceled their appearance. He is here to own it. And I like the fact he just speaks his mind. Well, he did reach out and consider canceling, but he's here.
I couldn't cancel. I do have a very sick fiance over here today.
Oh no.
And I did say to Mike, I was like, I'm not interested in sitting here and doing a fucking hour long show talking about how fat I am for these people, but I'm here because I knew that if I canceled, then it would be awful.
How about Derrick Henry, Yeah. He's a fan of the show. Market has nice glasses. So way to go, Market.
Yeah. Wait, Emily's turning on me. What did I do? Oh, that's not how you phrase it. I got it. Okay.
But at night game, they announced out this morning, my night game, Jordan Hare. Now, we won't learn anything about Bama and Auburn this weekend. But what if Auburn looks really good again, at least on offense? On a scale of 1 to 10, how much is that? How nervous are you for the Iron Bowl? Because that's their season on the line for Auburn to wreck Bama.
I mean, okay, hold on. I do want to address one thing real quick.
And I forgot, they'll make a bowl game if they win too.
I do
double motivation.
I do want to point out one thing. Shane Parks is right. The comment that he made said he expects an apology for OU fans acting like Texas fans. Uncalled for and wrong. Like, most importantly, wrong. And I apologize. That is, out of all the stuff that I said, that one was the one I felt like that was least factually based because there was no factual stuff involved in it. And I was wrong. I apologize. I do love being here. I used to love this show. It's been pretty hard the past couple weeks because of how aggressive you guys are at me for a straight hour. But you are right. Back to your question about Auburn and Bama. I mean, yeah, it's terrifying. I'm sure it'll get terrifying as it gets closer because regardless, Jordan-Hare is like a scary place to go. And here's what I told my buddy yesterday, my buddy Jeff. I was like, dude, he's like, oh, you're just going to beat Auburn. And I was like, you're right. But like, there's been much better Bama teams that have failed to do that or come very close to not doing that. And I think, and here's the thing too, Mike, this isn't like, there's times when you're like you talk about like the miracles that Auburn gets or like these like, oh yeah, and then they always get all these crazy things. The crazy things that happen aren't like it, that's like that happened in 2013. It was like the kick six and then the fucking thing with Georgia. But like for Bama, you haven't like really beaten them down in Jordan-Hare since maybe 2015. And even that was a late touchdown to put you up. I think it was like 29-15 or something weird. Like that was like 17 you lost when you and they won the national title. 2019 you lost, missed field goals. 2021 you should have lost and had a last minute drive and then a four touchdowns or four overtimes. 2023 you damn sure should have lost and won because of a fumbled punt and then a fourth and 31 or whatever it was. Like, I mean, yeah, there's been much better Bama teams that have gone there and struggled mightily. So I think it should be worrisome, but hopefully just like the Florida State game, this was the best thing that could have happened to that team and they go turn around. Otherwise, Mike, I'm going to have to sit here and eat crow again for Auburn fans because they're going to get to go fucking ride their bikes down to the Birmingham Bowl for the fourth time in 6 years. Like a bunch of 12-year-olds from now and then. Great movie. Great movie.
Hey, shout out SEC Shot also gifted 5 memberships. So let's talk about his Aggies here and shout out Jay Kaiser, Mile High. Hi, wonder what that guy's up to. Figurine Champ, that's Marler's nickname. Chris Maple and Phantom 70815. Welcome to the family, courtesy of SEC Sean. Marler supports half the SEC, and they all got ridiculously blown out or lost or horrifically defeated. Man, A&M undefeated, only undefeated, not only in all games, of course, but in conference now, thanks to Bama losing. How bad is this one, Chris? I mean, this is the biggest shit show I've ever seen for the Gamecocks. And where did you even want to start with this one?
I didn't. I wanted to cancel the show for this one. I'm telling you, I want you to just hear me out, okay? This has been my weekend. Thursday, Bama lost to Purdue in basketball. Friday, Allie's friends came in town who are all 30 years old, and we went out with 30-year-olds Friday night before I had a 15-hour workday on Saturday. Saturday, from the press box in Tiger Stadium, I watched South Carolina blow a 30-3 lead. Then I watched Bama blow a lead against Oklahoma. And then I had to wait. And then we all went out and I was like, you know what'll turn this day around, Mike? Let's go to the fucking casino because there's no way this bad luck can continue this bad. I lost $500 in 22 minutes. Then I woke up the next morning and the Falcons lost in overtime. And then I was like, you know, why don't we just watch a Christmas movie and get back in a good mood. And we watched Christmas with the Cranks. And that is the worst fucking movie I have ever seen in my life. And I saw something called Ice Spiders in college in theaters. And it was awful. So, yeah, this game right here, man.
Before you go any further, I can possibly add to the misery. Can you rank your fiance's friends in terms of attractiveness? Just for the audience, you know, not for you, but for the audience.
No, absolutely not. Okay. Allie's number one. That's all I'll say.
Okay.
No, we had a good time. We had a good time, but it was like, yeah, dude, I'm 30. I'm 39. I'm not 30. I don't like, thank you to whoever said I look like I'm 30. Okay. So back to this game, dude, it's like, it's so frustrating. And I told you this last week, man, cause it's like, I'm way more upset about this than the Alabama game. And you had a chance to like make your why is this keep doing this? You had a chance to like make the fan base believe again. And you had a chance to sit here and say, okay, how do you get up off the mat? And you have a new OC, calm plays, you had a bye week. Like because I know everyone around the program has it's very true, Emily. Very true. and they you had all the fan base around you that felt like they'd kind of given up, and they had quit on Shane Beamer and believing in this team. And maybe it was like, all right, we'll pick it up again next year and we'll see where we go from there. But you gave out for the first 30 minutes, like everything that you could have been fucking doing all year on offense, you did. And it wasn't like it was crazy shit, Mike. It was like, hey, did you see we mixed in a reverse? Like, that's pretty fun. Did you see that we're running the option with Lenoris? And did you see that we're trying to get a little bit more creative in our passing plays? We're doing dump offs on RPOs to the tight ends because it's an extension of the run game and we can get 4 to 6 yards and stay ahead of the chains for once. Do you see we're not committing a ton of penalties early? Like we're doing all the things you could have been fucking doing all year. And going into this game, South Carolina did not have more than 341 yards of offense in any game this season. They had 312 in the first half. And after the half, I told one of my friends, I said, listen, they need one more. And preferably it's a touchdown. But if you get one more, then you are going to win this game. But you have to get one more. And it was 31-10. And I'll tell you when the whole thing really fucked up. No one really keeps pointing to this because they're scared to, because they're worried that cop from the alley is going to show up in their fucking house and then assault them while there's no ring cameras on or something. What the fuck was that about, by the way? That guy, there's like five people in the comments every week. That's who I think they all are. So they had all that happen and you get down, Mike, it's 27-3 in the first half and you're inside the 10 yard line and you've got 31 seconds left, I think, or like, and they do a dump off pass to Brady Hunt and it has 19 seconds on the clock. They don't stop the clock until 11 seconds left. And I could not understand why you would not want more points there, because you have shown over and over again, it's been very hard for you to get them consistently, and there's no reason to take your foot off the gas. And then they did. And then you saw they come out and they score. And I kept thinking, listen, you just need three. You just need to find three more fucking points. Because here's the thing too, Mike. A&M hadn't done anything to you on offense the entire day. There was no reason to change anything or play scared. They hadn't consistently done anything to you all day. And the moment they got the 4th and 12, you could see Carolina's defense start backpedaling a little bit and playing on their heels and starting to get a little bit dicey with like their confidence and decision-making. Then you had the 4th and 1 where he decides to go for it. And then here's the thing. It was a 47-yard field goal, and that's not by any means, as Texas A&M's kicker showed, by any means that's not a lock to make, right? But I tell you what, from the track record, and as Oklahoma fans are now familiar with, like that's how I base a lot of my decisions on, is like, hey, here's the track record all season. You haven't been able to get 1 yard consistently. You really have not been able to get 1 yard consistently at any point this season. So kick the fucking field goal. Go up by 23 and then force Texas A&M to start trying to go be a little bit more like, okay, well, should we go for two here? Or like, do we need to start thinking about like conserving points? Do we need to start being more aggressive with what we need to do? Like you put all the pressure back on them, even if it's just 3 points. And once again, you refuse to do it. And the thing that's so frustrating about this, Mike, is that like, they have lost the ability to know how to win. And that's not like, that doesn't mean they can't win games, because they'll probably beat Coastal Carolina. They might beat Clemson. But here's a great example of it. That team I just mentioned, Clemson, shit the bed as many fucking times as they could. You can clip that. There's a lot of cuss words in that sentence. Like, they shit the bed as many times as they could in the final however many minutes against Louisville, and they still found a way to win. I think South Carolina has lost the ability to know how to win games under Shane Beamer right now. Like, maybe they get that back. But now, dude, now you have to really start to wonder, because – In the first half of that game, you could have turned a corner, got to six wins, or you could, 6 wins could have been on the table, because then you beat them, you beat Coastal Carolina, and now you go into a game against Clemson, man, and you talk about the sliding doors of this and the dominoes that could have fell. Then you could have been in a situation at home beating Clemson for the third time in 4 years. Yes, it's a disappointing year, but you finish 6-6 and you go to a bowl game, and look how you did it on your way there, beating Clemson, beating a seventh top 10 opponent in the month of November under Shane Beamer. But instead, the biggest collapse the SEC has seen in 21 years. Teams were 0-286 in SEC games when down by 27 or more points until Saturday. It's fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, and now the pressure ramps up. There's a lot of fans calling for his job. I think it's still premature for that, but I think that's somewhat fair, don't you?
With what?
Fans calling for his job?
Yeah, I do. I mean, like, I've said this. What grown adult do you have in your house barking? I have.
It's my girlfriend. She's barking.
I was going to say Cousin Shane, but you beat me to it. I think the thing that's frustrating with him is I don't know the right answer, because here's the big picture part of it, man. I broke this out on my show last night. The big picture part of it is this, man. If you bring him back, which I personally think he's earned the right to do, that doesn't mean it's the right decision, because I saw somebody say this the other day. Listen, man. Yeah, Steven up, roll tide. More like Steven down bad after this week. I get the feeling, brother. I'm going to change my name to Cholesterol and then call myself Cholesterol up. So, you know, here's the thing with South Carolina is that, like, they are most likely going to go 4-8, and maybe you go 5-7, and you can have that in your back pocket. You beat Clemson this many times. But my big question is, man, like, if you go to next year, because now you have to get all these kids to buy into why they shouldn't be taking calls from people in the portal, like why you should come back. Is Lenora's going to come back? Are you going to make the right hire at OC? You've proven time and time again you can't do it. And all of a sudden, if that's going to happen, then what's the ceiling, Mike? Like what's the ceiling for Shane to be like, all right, we feel great again. We went 8-4. Because if he goes 6-6, you're like, and then even if he goes 8-4, Mike, even if he goes 8-4, then you're still looking at this thing. And it's like, well, like, who's to say he doesn't have a massive fucking dip the next year? Because that's what happens every year.
Yeah, and don't you think it's fair? I'm sitting here thinking back that the team, I mean, this has basically been who they've been all year. Like, there's not really been a highlight. That Virginia Tech game was ugly. And for whatever reason, Beamer's teams always start slow, but they always heat up.
Yeah.
And it just never happened this year. And I don't know why that is, but don't you think it's fair to say this is a team that has, like, just shown minimal to no improvement?
Yeah. I mean, it's what my coach in college would have called just being a mental midget. I don't know. Can SEC do better? I don't know who they should target. I don't have the answers to any of those questions about what to do next. I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that, like, just how bad things have gotten. But Saturday, like it is. You were 3-5, Mike, going to the Bama game, and everyone had the same mindset of like, well, it can't get any worse. And then it was like, you know, it can't get any worse, man. So and then they blow the game against Bama, and then they blow this one. And that's why I'm like, when I brought up the thing, I was like, I think he's earned the right to fix this, and he says he's going to fix it. And there's a real part of me that believes that, Mike. I feel like he's done a lot of good things for South Carolina. He does a lot of things really well. Like he coaches special teams really well. He recruits very well. He's gotten that fan base and the donorship to believe in the program enough to build like top 15 facilities in the entire country. Like, they have done a lot of stuff around the program since he's gotten there because of him. And even with that loss, he's still 6-2 in the month of November against ranked opponents. Like he has done a good job at some things. He has failed miserably this year in so many other areas, and so has the team. And so, and part of that, like all of it falls on the coach, but part of it also is like, hey man, I know you're not the one calling plays, but you're the one writing his fucking checks. Like that guy should have been fired weeks ago. I would think that the play calling we saw this past weekend, that probably beats Alabama. And then like, and then who knows what happens for the rest. Like maybe they do figure out a way to go into A&M and finish that game off. But now I just think things are so bleak. And when I made the comment about how he's earned that right, somebody made the comment that was like, well, if you wait a year to do what you should do this year, what's the point? Because if you're not going to be any better off in the long run, does it really fucking matter? And the answer is probably no.
Yeah. Hey, shout out Russ. He said when A&M was down 27-3, if we just hold him to a field goal, we'll be down by only four scores. And he nailed it. So we said all that, but we haven't talked much A&M. You know, is this the team of destiny? And how much do you credit them for getting down in this massive hole and not going in the tank? Because I thought by the end of the first half, they were really pressing. They were, you know, they were trying. Marcel Reed was making mistake after mistake. Yeah. Receivers were dropping the football. Defense, of course, you know, one missed tackle and Nick Harbers, he's gone. Just mistake after mistake after mistake. And they had to be damn near perfect in the second half to mount this comeback. Yet they did it. Could this be a champion? Like if A&M goes on to win the championship, which is not a given, but if they do, don't you think this will be a moment where they'll look back and be like, all right, this is when we locked it in and there was we never had a doubt we'd lose a game.
Yeah. Well, it's a good question because I think it's funny you bring it up. I see Warby Broad who says, well, if it isn't Chris Gay Glasses Marler. And it's interesting you bring up being in a massive hole in the first half because I was in that guy's mom's massive hole last night. So it makes sense and I get it. Seamless transition. I think it's a huge win for A&M, obviously. It's like here's the big thing with A&M. Auburn wasn't as close to the score, but it was still 16-3, so fine. But the Arkansas game, I think Arkansas scored a touchdown in the last like 2 or 3 minutes. They were up by 10 in that one. There's not a lot of close games on here, Mike. Like the Notre Dame game, that has reason to be close. But they haven't really played with their food a bunch this year. Like they played like shit against South Carolina. And you could also, I saw some South Carolina fans saying like, well, you know, we missed two interceptions. And it's like, okay, well then stop fucking doing that. Like my coworker, Palmer was sitting next to me and he goes, why are they so bad at doing good things? They're just so, and it's like, that's who they are. But A&M to defend them, sure, maybe there could have been two interceptions, whatever. How many drops did you see from A&M? And they still kept going to it. And I thought it was so impressive. And it wasn't even this. I think Craver was held to one catch for 6 yards. Did he leave with an injury or something? Like, it was a lot. Hold on. Play cool. Fiance's in here.
Uh-oh. So you were saying which one of her friends is the most attractive?
Mike asked me to rank your friends. I said no. And I said, you were number one, no matter what. Okay.
Everyone can hear you. Hey, we got receipts. She can go back and watch it. He did say that. So
A&M, I think, I don't know about Team of Destiny, but I will say it's going to be awesome to watch what happens in 2 weeks with A&M because, man, that Texas fan base has talked so much shit about A&M especially, and they've talked so much shit this year in general. And watching them cap off a 12-0 season – even though I'm not an A&M fan, I have no ties to them at all. Like it would be awesome to see them do that, especially against a team like Texas with all the shit talk they got. I keep seeing people say the schedule's been easy. Go back to the schedule for me for a second. I keep seeing people say that the schedule's been easy. I know they don't have Ole Miss, they don't have Bama, and they don't have Georgia. Another way to look at that is none of those three teams have A&M. And I would venture to say that at least two of them maybe would have another loss on their schedule if they did. Now, I'm not saying – like that LSU game should have been much more difficult. The Missouri game should have been much more difficult. You had to play a backup quarterback in one of those. But going on the road and winning at Notre Dame is a really, really impressive win. Florida has given a lot of teams fits. It wasn't them. Mississippi State has given a ton of teams in this conference fits all season, and they didn't struggle with them at all. So I don't know if they're a team of destiny. I hate to say this. I'm not trying to be a dick towards A&M. Just with what I know about A&M in general, and this is a track record speaking, it's probably, just like I said to you last week, Mike, it's probably an unfair place to come from in this question about this A&M team. But yeah, I'm probably looking at, if A&M is on a neutral field against Georgia, I'm taking Georgia. If they're on a neutral field against Ole Miss, I might be taking Ole Miss. That's not taking away from how good of a team A&M is or can be. It's just, it's hard for me still to wrap my head around an A&M team beating those teams in moments like this, this big. And, you know, a lot of other teams in this conference are going to be playing much tougher Novembers, I'll say that. But, you know, I think that they are a really good team, and I think they are, they're clearly destined for the playoff. I don't believe. No, Amanda's right. I don't believe.
Well, sorry. I was trying to do something over there.
Like what?
Well,
don't tell me.
I don't want to explain the inner workings of this.
Yeah. Of that guy's spot. Mom's hole.
Yeah, I was looking her up to see if I can share photos of her. Well, hey, we haven't even talked about this one, Chris. It was a massive game, and it doesn't seem as massive because Georgia just basically dominated Texas ass in the second half here, 135-10. How impressed were you? Were you with the Dogs, and especially that onside kick that took Sarkisian's soul? And man, now it looks like if there is a Texas 8-4, they reside in Austin, not in College Station. How about them damn Dogs?
Dude, more like Lawston, because they keep I want to give a shout out to something else in Austin first. I would be remiss if I didn't do this. One of my good buddies from back in Atlanta, stand-up comedian Dedrick Flynn, last week in Austin became the newest full-time member of the Kill Tony lineup, and won. If you saw a video of a crazy black guy screaming about Febreze plugins,
oh wow,
Dedrick. So
that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We're all doing great from the Atlanta comedy scene circa 2016. Look at us now. He's killing it. So this thing with Georgia and Texas, I thought it was an awesome game. Listen, here's something that's really become impressive to me with Georgia is the fact that they are now 29-3 in games since 2020 where the opponent has scored first. And Texas came out. They didn't really punch him in the mouth, like getting a touchdown on the opening drive. They probably could have if what's-his-name doesn't slip. But Georgia, as they always do, weather the storm, makes great adjustments, and there you go. I don't think he got booed off the stage. I'm pretty sure that didn't happen. But anyway, you know what? Y'all go back to making fun of me. Don't make fun of my friends. That's so fucking stupid. Anyway, this thing, Texas played great for three quarters. I don't even think that that's necessarily the case, because even when it was 14-10, it didn't feel like it was necessarily a very close game. And so – and here's the thing, and I want all Texas fans to hear this. You can sit here and be, I love the soft Cajun comment. You can sit here and say that it was a close game, and they've had two losses to top 10 teams, and they were both on the road, and all those things are true. Like all those things are true. But here's another thing that's true. You know what kind of fucking teams say that kind of stuff? Soft teams. Soft teams say that kind of stuff. And teams that aren't any good and have a loser mentality say that kind of stuff. That's a little dick, little brother energy that you have made fun of for Texas A&M for having for years, having to play a difficult schedule. Oh, well, we almost beat this team. And you make fun of them constantly and give them shit about it constantly because of how close little brother was. Well, now the shoe's on the other foot and you finally had to step up and play somebody, because last year you didn't play anybody with a pulse for most of the fucking season. And now you go into Athens, and I tell you what, guys, it's hard to win in Athens. It is. They've lost two games there since 2017. It's very hard to win in Athens. But you have carried yourself in a way going into the season. And it's not just the fans. It's the media. It's the team. It's Michael Taft in the post-game interview, which was fucking hysterical. What kind of competitive – the delusion isn't even just with the fan base and the media. The delusion stretches into the actual locker room, apparently, because – if your takeaway from that game was, yeah, I still think we're a playoff team, that's a fucking joke. You lost by 25 points. Like, this is this game and Texas and Ohio State, it's the two lowest point totals you have scored since Sark has been there. He's been miserable against top 10 opponents. Like, it makes zero sense. It makes zero sense to me that you could have this little self-awareness, but I'm so used to it by now from Texas fans and media, especially, that it's not surprising. But like going in there and seeing Sarkisian say this about the three losses and how they're two of them are against top 10 teams, and then seeing a captain, like a guy that people talk about as an all-SEC, I think he's a captain, an all-SEC type player, Michael Taft, him bitching about the fact that, well, this game, this could have gone our way. It didn't, dude. It didn't. Like, and it didn't. And then you rolled over and died. You let them go up 21-10, and then they pushed your shit in the rest of the game because they had an onside kick, which is coaching, and then willed you to sleep. That's what they did. They choked you out in the fourth quarter until you went to sleep, and you fucking did. And I don't think that that's a bad way to view that game. I think it's exactly what happened.
Right. And do you think there's a case to be made? I know A&M's record's better. We should honor that and say, you know, give them number one seed if they finish the deal. But is there a case to be made that Georgia's the most dangerous or best team in the conference right now?
I think most dangerous is more fair. I don't think you can say anytime an SEC team goes 12-0, it's very hard to not give that team credit. Yeah. And I know what I just said about A&M, but like, listen, they're going to go 12-0, if they go 12-0 in this schedule, they deserve all the credit in the world. I'll tell you the other thing I'll say too is like I think Georgia is the most dangerous because this is when Kirby starts getting his team to start peaking at the right time. And people didn't want to talk about this, but let's also bring this up, okay? Last year, this is not meant to be morbid or make excuses, but these are things that happened last year in Georgia's first round loss to Notre Dame, which added to the narrative that the SEC is done with and now they can't pay players anymore and they're not any good and blah, blah, blah. Georgia had a backup quarterback making his first start in college against Notre Dame, a team that ended up going to the national title game. The night before that game, a fucking terrorist attack happened on Bourbon Street and delayed the game another day. On the way to the game, Kirby Smart's dad was hospitalized and died during the middle of the game, which I would have been happy about if it was my dad. But with Kirby, I'm sure he has an actual good relationship with his dad. Yeah, daddy issues is the least concerning thing or most surprising thing I've said, Mike. But like that, his whole thing, like all those things happened in that game, and then no one made an excuse for Georgia, including Georgia. I think that them going into the playoff this year, they have such a huge chip on their shoulder. They're peaking at the right time, and I think they are a very, very scary team to watch.
Bronny says, "Gash, I love Mother Mondays." Yeah, you were afraid to come on. You're killing it, sir. You know who else kills it? Huel Freeze.
Okay.
Go check him out. Back again for another week. Huel.com. Promo code THATSEC. You can see it on the screen there. Huel.com. THATSEC is the promo code to get 15% off. I was just telling Marler off air, and this is God's honest truth. I love Huel. I've been on it. I'm using it as a meal replacement shake. They have all kinds of different flavors. We're losing weight over here, Chris, because we are going to gain it during the holidays. So I'm trying to prepare by getting down. You see the logic there? But go check them out. Huel's a complete meal. Has all the vitamins and nutrients you need. 27 vitamins and minerals. I love all the different flavors like chocolate, peanut butter, strawberry, banana, cookies and cream, iced coffee. Go check them out. Huel.com. 35 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, no sugar added, less than $5 a meal. You can't beat it, Chris. You can't beat Huel.com. Promo code THATSEC, 15% off. They sent me a bunch of stuff, Chris, and I liked it so much. I'm using my own money to order more because, again, you can't just do this for 2 weeks and it's going to have an effect, right? You got to do it weeks after week. So I'm signing up.
Right now, Mike. Well, I'm going to borrow some money after what happened at that casino on Saturday, but I'm Huel in.
Hell yeah, brother. And then, hey, I'm doubling up too, Chris, with my Bubs. Bubs Naturals. Go check them out back again for another week. They are loving the sponsorship or the partnership with the cousins. So go check them out. BubsNaturals.com. Same promo code, THATSEC. Get you 20% off of your collagen. We need to get you some collagen after the weekend you've had here, Chris. You got stiff joints. You know, stiffy, recover from the gym, whatever, or you need your hair and nails taken care of. They got you covered over at BubsNaturals.com. Promo code THATSEC for 20% off. Again, that's Bubs Naturals. Promo code THATSEC, 20% off. Huel, Bubs, go get it.
Mike, speaking I got some comments to get us caught up on here. Okay.
Yes, sir.
I just showed my mom a picture of him, and she said, he's handsome, but is he gay? Well, here's the thing. That means I'm losing weight. I used to get mistaken for a gay and a lesbian a ton before I had the beard. Got a lot of Rachel Maddow comments. So I used to do stand-up. So that just means that I'm back to losing weight, which I love. The other question was, Marler, if you had a pod, I'd listen. I have like 8, so check this out. Locked on.
Yeah.
And then also Fourth and Wrong. And then the last one I'll say is somebody said Marler is banned from a golf course in Alabama. That is actually factually incorrect. I'm banned from Shreveport and a golf course in the Woodlands, Texas. But I do believe the Shreveport thing is lifted.
Okay. Well, thank you for that update. I've been wondering. I'm also wondering, we haven't even talked about this. This is wild. I don't care so much about the game. Shout out Ole Miss, though, for getting a 10-1, 34-24. But all anybody can talk about is Lane Kiffin. Is he going to Florida? And, man, this is heating up, Chris. Here's the latest. And this is real. Now, I'm not saying anything because I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. You know, people will tell you they know this, that, and the other. I don't think a decision has been made. But there is actual a reality here where Lane Kiffin does not coach. Now, I'm already ahead. We've already talked about the playoff. He may not coach the playoff, and Ole Miss is getting there. But I hear he may not even coach the Egg Bowl. Like, he may not be sticking around for that. I mean, this is insanity. What are your thoughts on this? Lane Kiffin finally making the playoff at Ole Miss, and he may not be around to coach it.
So you, I'm sure, and everyone in the comments thought I was late because I was avoiding being on here or whatever. I was late because I was putting together a – hold on. I was putting together a article and posting on social media that we're reporting from our website here in Baton Rouge, LouisianaSports.net, and ESPN 104.5, that Lane Kiffin's wife, Layla, is in town right now touring Baton Rouge. It's been reported by multiple outlets, including ours. So he is the him being open to at least looking is happening, and it's happening right now. Back to this game, because I do want to I feel bad for Ole Miss fans. I don't actually, but like, I mean, I don't. Most of them are paying for, like, if there was money from an Ole Miss fan in this comment section, it would be their daddy's money, guaranteed. Ole Miss fans, it is like if nepotism was given a Patagonia vest, that is all of them. So I think the thing with Ole Miss, it was a really impressive win. Watching Lane Kiffin take his belt off in the middle of that, what do you call it? In the middle of that post-game press conference was fucking hysterical. And yeah, I thought that was awesome. I don't think you should do that hand gesture anymore. But so I thought that was really impressive. I thought, like, they were shut down for so much of this game and then held and checked. And like, I think they were like their third down. They were terrible for most third down, but they were 5 out of 7 on fourth down. They did everything they needed to do to win. Now there's a couple of things that I thought were stupid that should have happened. The pass interference call late, I thought was horseshit. And I also thought he should have probably gone for it on that that second to last drive where he ended up on 4th and 1 throwing to a tight end and it sailed incomplete. Like, would have liked to see him get points there and go up by 6. I think all those things would have made sense. But yeah, man, I think the Ole Miss thing here this year, I they didn't deserve to be in the playoff last year. They haven't necessarily played the toughest of schedules this year. But I will maintain this. There's not a team I'm more excited to see get into the playoff than Ole Miss out of the SEC, because Georgia's really good and Kirby Smart's awesome. I think Bama's good. I think, as I said earlier, Oklahoma, the way they played Saturday, if Mateer can start getting back to September Mateer with that defense, they're going to be really good. And A&M is obviously potentially going to be like undefeated. But man, watching Kiffin scheme up against some of these other defenses like Indiana and Ohio State, like, that's going to be awesome. Like, that's just going to be awesome. So really impressed that he was able to go 10-1, best start to any Ole Miss, season. And also, Mike, as you know, the biggest game in program history, according to some, from Ole Miss. So huge win.
Yeah, but do you think there is a chance that he doesn't coach in the playoff?
No, I don't think that. There's the one thing I know about Lane Kiffin is, I think I know. I don't see him finally getting to what would be the promised land for him like getting to the playoff and earning this. You gotta think about the trip he's taken, man. Like, dude, this is a guy who was so fucking selfish and narcissistic in 2016. He quit on the Alabama team during the week of prep going into the national title game, a game where they lost by, I don't remember. I think it was like 1 point or 3 points on a pick play and over. Like that. That is, I think that game probably goes differently in 2016 if he's there. And he was so selfish the way he was handling his whole process. He's gone. All the stuff he did before that, but like he's really made so many positive changes in his life and righted so many wrongs. And it's like, it's hard to have the people in the SEC agree on anything. And I think one thing that people in all of college football agree on is they really do love this version of Lane Kiffin. Maybe Ole Miss fans won't if he ends up leaving, but right now it's been a really cool story. I have a hard time believing he's going to finally make it over the hump and get to the playoff and then not coach in those games.
But maybe you've not considered this. What if it's not his decision?
I don't know.
Now stay with me here. Again, this is all hypothetical, right? And we don't know where this is going. He may stay for all we know. And I hope, to your point, I kind of hope he does. You know, clearly he doesn't need to go somewhere else to compete for SEC and national championships. But let's say they want to hire John Summerall, which I think they do if he leaves. I think they do want to hire John Summerall. You cannot sit around on your hands if Auburn's going to sit here and hire him. Does that make sense? So you have to get it. If he's intent on leaving, you have to move on as quickly as possible to potentially get, and I don't even know if it would be John Summerall or whoever, you know, but you can't miss your window to hire that guy because Kiffin's sticking around for 2 more weeks.
But if you're Ole Miss, you also cannot sit here and be like, hey man, you're not allowed to coach us in the playoff because you still want to win in the playoff no matter what. I think you just figure out a mutual agreement and everyone's mature about it. I know I saw one comment that was like, why would he not be narcissistic now? I mean, that was 10 years ago. You know what I mean? A lot can change in 10 years for a lot of people. I mean, 10 years ago, I remember wanting to get a Taylor Swift tattoo and I didn't get one. And now even 8 years later, in 2023, I still wanted that tattoo. I still regret it. But now that I'm a grown adult and have a fiance that's a woman, and she informed me how embarrassing that would be, I'm glad I didn't get it. So a lot of people can change a long time. I think if he leaves, it'll be interesting. There's so much smoke, Mike, with Florida and in my crack pipe. There's so much smoke. And so if you leave and go to Gainesville, I can see it happening because now we're at the point too where they're talking about numbers. Like we're talking about numbers now, where it's like, all right, I think it was Noah McCready put it out on Twitter the other day. It's like if you are talking about the actual contract numbers, and that means there's at least some initial negotiations happening of like where you're trying to make sure you're ballparking the same range of what each side would be willing to spend and willing to get. I think those conversations are happening. I also think that Kiffin is a big enough wild card to where like he could wake up tomorrow and be like, I think this is the best move for our family. I think this is the best thing to do. And he's clearly looking at his options. But I also think that he could win a game in the Egg Bowl and have it mean so much to him in that moment where he's like, you know what? I do want to spend the rest of my time here and then stay and leave like 2 years later from now. Like there's no telling what's going on inside his head. I just feel like he is on a mission to win, and I don't think anything is going to stand in the way of him trying to get there this year.
And then Figure Champ says this is all just a leverage move. I literally don't think Lane Kiffin can get more leverage.
Yeah, like, there's no way.
I don't understand. I mean, years past, yes, but right now, yeah. I mean, he holds all the cards for Florida, possibly even LSU.
He's also a dickhead that, like, the leverage move would not have been sending his ex-wife to Baton Rouge. The leverage move would have been him flying his ass out here, taking a picture of him at like Elsie's Plate and Pie and being like, yep, just stop by for breakfast, location, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Like he would have done all those things because that's what he's always done. Big track record guy here, Mike.
Yeah. And it's my understanding that she was in Gainesville on Sunday too.
Yeah, that actually is very true. I heard the same thing from a pretty reliable source. But I can tell you, this is not a rumor. for the Baton Rouge thing. I can't confirm that from Gainesville. I can 1,000% confirm Baton Rouge happening today, like as we're talking.
Right. So they're doing due diligence to yeah. say it will. And speaking of Baton Rouge, you were in the press box for this. I don't even know what to call this, a calamity here. LSU, at least they kept the boot here, 23-22. I just feel awful for Arkansas people. I don't know if they're ever going to get something nice again, at least this year. But how much are they celebrating down there in Baton Rouge for beating Arkansas by one?
Emily said, because you're there with her right now. No.
That was Layla? No.
Yeah, that was Layla, not hell. The staff is one of the I just need you to understand what's going on in this 3-hour window for me, Mike, emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina at 11. This game at 11:45. Bama at 2:30. It was the worst football I've watched. This game sucked. I think you give credit. Like I said this on my article on Sunday. You always celebrate the wins, and that doesn't mean that you have to celebrate them in a way that's like, well, like we won. That's all that matters. There's no room to improve or anything. But it's also, I think, something. I think it's a really big win. It's the first win for an African-American head coach in the history of the program. I thought that was cool for Frank Wilson. It obviously meant a lot for Frank Wilson. That was my biggest takeaway, was not how great the game was, because it wasn't. This is not going to be a game where anyone's going to like fucking say, I remember where I was when this happened, or like this version of the Golden Boot. But it was cool to see when the final seconds ticked down that like it still meant something to the team, how happy and rejuvenated they felt, like it felt like they were after getting that win. And then, you know, the part where I do think there's something to be said. Like, I don't think Frank Wilson needs to be the next head coach at LSU, but I think having him on staff is almost a must at this point, because it means so much to him. And it comes very, very, it's very visible and clear in his work and how he approaches stuff, and also how he celebrated the game afterwards. The one thing I will say that was impressive was how well LSU's defense held Taylen Green in check. I thought that was really impressive. I thought there was a little bit more creativity on offense this go around. Now they're gone from Joe Sloan. I thought Michael Van Buren looked good at times. I thought he looked bad at times. But I think this whole thing also is it kind of goes down to the fact that like this is still a very talented roster. It's a very underwhelming year, but it was a good win. I will also say that at the end of the game, somebody said Arkansas is the best 2-win team in America. And my first thought was, there's no way they're 2-8, right? Like, surely they're like 4-6. No, they're 2-8. That is tough.
This stat, Chris? They are 27 points away from being 9-1.
That's unbelievable. that's tough.
Gut wrenching. You know what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of gut wrenching, that's what I see when I think of Mississippi State's defense getting ramshackled by Ahmad Hardy, 300 rushing yards. Shout out Missouri for not going in the tank. I think the program's too strong for that. And now it sets up, Chris, for what I think is the best game in the weekend in the SEC, perhaps. Missouri at Oklahoma, where they could play sport. Oklahoma does not honor this as a rivalry. They think less of the Tigers. Yeah. Missouri go in there and eliminate Oklahoma from a playoff, all of a sudden we got ourselves a little bit of a rivalry.
Yeah. I don't even know who I'm supposed to cheer for in that one. I know who I will cheer for. I don't know who I'm supposed to cheer for. I do think this is like going to last year. I remember putting out a video at the start of the year, like the three best bets that I'm hammering at the start of the year. And it was like Georgia over Florida, somebody over, I forgot the other one, but then it was Missouri over Oklahoma. And the reason why is because all the things you just said, and in Oklahoma's first year into the conference, a game at Missouri, probably going to be at night. It's like before Oklahoma plays Bama, and it was after they played someone else. And it's like, you got them in this perfect window. And I was like, man, this is Missouri. This will be like Missouri's Super Bowl because of all the ill will they have towards this team and what they've spent, the years they've spent together in the Big 12. I mean, now you look at a year later, and I think Oklahoma's got the chip on their shoulder, and now they also know what's in front of them, right? And I think that's the biggest thing. It's like, it'd be one thing if Missouri and them were and Oklahoma were playing for the same playoff spot and both were fully healthy, but like, Oklahoma has everything in front of them. They're getting healthier. They're at home, a place that's been very difficult to win, like for a lot of teams this year. And then the other part of it too, man, is that like, I just think that what does Missouri do well? They run the football. Well, guess what, guys? No one does that to Oklahoma. So I have a hard time believing that's gonna happen.
Well, and I know you've made fun of this, which I hate you for, but you're accurate. Tennessee can't beat Florida in Florida.
Let's talk about it, Mike.
I mean, what do you like Tennessee in this spot?
Somebody said, "Don't pick OU, Marler. We don't need you." Willie, I want you to break down that
sentence. We don't need you.
I want you to think about emotionally what you're saying right now and how fucking broken you sound. Anyway, we don't need you. Jesus Christ. So anyway, the Tennessee Florida thing. This is a wild stat, but it is a listen to your lock. I lost my double wide. Tennessee has beaten Florida twice in Gainesville since 1972. Yeah, man, I don't know. I think that they win this game. The point spread was a little bit lower. Love you too, Willie. Marler's a little baby girl. I'm little. Thanks, dude. Thank you. I think thanks, Huel. So I think this is a good spot for Tennessee. It's also a weird spot too. Boo Carter got dismissed today, which is kind of odd. Florida continues to play teams really well. And here's the big thing, Mike. Because it fucking happened again this week, and it continues to happen. Joey Aguilar cannot fucking seem to not turn the ball over. Now, I was magic for this last week with what's his name, John Mateer. So maybe I'll work my magic again here and say that Joey Aguilar cannot go into a game and not turn the football over. It's what he does every single time he comes out. Every single time he steps foot on the field, he already has at least one interception before the first pass is even thrown. You can pretty much take that to the bank. Blah, 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 blah. So I've done all my voodoo. Joey Aguilar, go enjoy your 400-yard, three-touchdown game with no interceptions.
Any thoughts on Arkansas, Texas, or Kentucky, Vanderbilt, which got the SEC designation this week?
Hold on. Ronnie Barker says I should read the sign behind me, Mike. Show him the sign behind me real quick.
Doesn't it say quiet?
So Ronnie, I'm gonna be admittedly defensive, and I want to point something out to you right now. It is 3:00 in the middle of a Monday workday, and you are here once again watching me speak about college football. So shut the fuck up, and I'm going to keep going. Anyway, I think that Florida, like, they're good enough to put a scare in them. They can get multiple turnovers. I think I guess Jermond McCoy is just not going to play this year. I guess he's just not going to play. So that part kind of sucks. I don't know, man. They should win this game. I think the bigger question is, like, is everyone locked in and focused to finish out 9-3 because – you still have Vandy next week too. And I do know that you cannot go down there and fuck around with Florida for 30 to 45 minutes. Cause you will find out like they right. have got to go win this game and win it early. Now, the cool thing about the portal is that you have enough players on this year's roster that for the most part, aren't like these, like how it used to be where it's like, I've always wanted to play for Tennessee and I played for Tennessee. And this rivalry means a lot to me because it meant a lot to my daddy and in the 90s or whatever. Like, That's no longer in play. This year's team is not the teams that have lost over and over and over again. Heupel, I think he gets off the schneid on this one against Florida, but we'll see.
But if last week's Florida shows up, I think they beat Tennessee. If 2 weeks ago against Kentucky shows up, they could get smoked. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah. I don't know about smoked. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, like, That's a very good Ole Miss deep or Ole Miss offense that they held in check for so long.
And it's similar to Tennessee's. So it's like they're, yeah. I don't know. In a sense, it sets up well for Florida.
I can agree with that. But I still think that this is I think this is like, there's certain things that Heupel has had to do a thing every year where it feels like he's turned a corner a little bit. And I think this will be the one they turns the corner this year where it's like, you got to get over this hump, man. You have to get over this hump. And keep in mind, this is a rivalry. These two teams hate each other. And Florida is not going to be able to go to a bowl game this year. But you know just as well as I do, it would make their season to have this one last home win against Tennessee and extend that streak even further. But
hey, will you read Serial Killer's comment as we close here?
Champs of Little Man Energy.
Sooner fans continue to be champs of Little Man Energy, courtesy of Serial Killer. Not our words, but his. I think it's that's Marler's burner. Cereal that you eat.
I read it, yeah.
And then shout out All Day Trey, gifted Slavin Stan Jr. Big Florida fan. He's waiting for Kiffin down there. He gifted Zen Eater 82, JR the Legend. Zen Eater. Tyrese, he gifted Tyrese, the singer. And then Steven Bro Dad, he gifted Marcus Braylene. Welcome to the family. Anything else? Final comments here before you check out here?
That is all.
Any, you want to plug socials or the shows? You said no. They don't know where to find it. You didn't tell
them. I'll see you next week, guys.
Okay. Thanks for showing up, buddy. Bye-bye. Hey, we'll be back with Steven here in a couple hours. 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. Later.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.